Hello and welcome to Gorgeous Escapes. And I'm very excited because I'm with wonderful Sarah Tucker, who has just, she's walked in wearing an Australian hat. Ging gong, gooly, 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 wash, wash. You've just come back from Australia, haven't you, darling?
I have. I've just come back from Sydney. It's the last time I think I was there was about 20 years ago now. And I remember the first time I went there for another radio station. And I arrived on the day of the Mardi Gras. And if anyone has been to Sydney on Mardi Gras, it is phenomenal. It is so colourful and brilliant. But this time, at the end of May and the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks in June, they have something called the Vivid Festival. That's V-I-V-I-D, which is basically turns Sydney into a living firework. Everything is lit up, from the sails on the incredible Sydney Opera House to the bridge, to even the buildings. They have artworks and moving artworks over every single building in Sydney. So it's an incredible time to go. It's there, obviously.
It's like Diwali, sort of.
It is. But it's a very, very funky, non-powdery, throwing, getting messy Diwali.
And it's not a religious festival. It's a sort of, is it a cultural festival as well?
Well, they call it, it's called a city of, during the time of lights, of music, of dance, and of ideas. Like the lights, it's obvious, it's all around you, and you'll be able to see on the website how everything just looks. It looks something out of Blade Runner, really, because the moving images. And also there's, I'll give you an example, unusual example. There's under one bridge where usually cars go under. It's completely blocked off and you can lie on the ground. And there was about 300 people lying on the ground looking up onto the underside of the bridge. And on the underside of the bridge, there was all these moving images of the history of Pixar. Which you've got things like The Incredibles, WALL-E, Up,
Toy Story
1, 2, 3, 4. But the way it's done in a very artistic way and actually a very moving way. Mm. You know, first day I arrived there, I went up, you can do a bridge walk and you go right up to the top. But during the Vivid Festival, they have a disco at the very, very top. So I was dancing away to Foo Fighters with all this psychedelic music right above Sydney with all the lights going on.
This sounds amazing. Most fun ever.
It is really. I didn't think Sydney could top Mardi Gras because the colour when Mardi Gras happens is phenomenal. But I highly recommend if you are going straight down under.
So what time of year is it there? So we know that it's May, June now. What is that coming up to? Winter for them.
It is. It's coming up to their autumn, winter.
What time of year? I mean, what sort of temperature is it?
It's low 20s. So actually, while I was out there, we had much, much better weather there than you had here. Yes. I think you had floods here.
But you had lovely sunshine.
We did.
And just clear days.
We did. Yeah. We had glorious sunshine. It's very warm. Everyone could get a little bit of a tan. Obviously, you've got to have lots of sunscreen on. It is a very al fresco a destination of Sydney. I'm always very aware of the friction between Melbourne and Sydney. They're not far apart, you know, an hour and a half fly time. Melbourne is beautiful, incredible symmetry and wonderful architecture, excellent culture, whereas Sydney is beach culture. You know, went surfing on Bondi Beach, everyone's in shorts, perhaps the fashion scene isn't as hip, as sophisticated as it is in Melbourne. But interestingly, Melbourne has a chip on its shoulder about Sydney. Sydney doesn't give up about Melbourne, and that's an interesting thing. I think it's because Melbourne doesn't really have an iconic building or statement about it, whereas Sydney has the Opera House and it has the harbour, and that packs a powerful punch.
All these events, it was busy then. Was it with Australians, tourists? Who was there?
A whole combination. I think what happens during these months, most people think when they're going to go to Australia, they want to go during our winter.
Yes.
And that's when the flights are extremely expensive. Whereas if you go this time of year, they are good from half the price that you would pay to three quarters.
What sort of price?
Well, you could get, again, it's there's so many websites out there with sort of like comparing flights. So it's like I went with Cathay Pacific. I stopped off at Hong Kong, which is a really good stop-off destination. I do suggest if you do have Air Miles or Avios It's like Air Miles, where you can get into a lounge. If you land at some ungodly hour, like I did on the way back at 4 o'clock in the morning, you book yourself into the lounge for 3 hours, 4 hours, and sometimes you have a stopover time, and then you know, you can go off refreshed. They have things like showers in the lounge, so it's a really good idea. But I think during this time, when, you know, I literally, when I arrived, my feet didn't touch the ground. On the first day, I did the bridge walk. I had a tour of the Sydney Opera House, which, like tours of any iconic building, I always go, oh, okay, it's going to be the usual tourist pap you're going to get. But it's very, very interesting. The history of it is interesting. Queen Elizabeth, our own Queen Elizabeth, opened it in 1973.
Who is the architect?
It's a Danish guy called Houston.
That's it.
And the only problem was, is that his entry, because they had a competition to design this iconic building for the Opera House overlooking into the harbour. He won it. His ideas didn't just extend to the outside, but also the inside, how they ventilate it, sort of like the tiles. There's self-cleaning tiles on the sails. There's 1,000 rooms in the building. Actually, having had the tour, I don't know where the rooms are, but they, I think, rather disingenuously, in my opinion, decided that he was spending too much money and got another guy, Peter Hall, to continue the, his Australian guy, to continue the design. And he actually spent double what Houston would have spent. So although they've said, you know, they've recognised the Houston's greatness, he wasn't invited to the launch in 1973, and he's dead now. So I sort of, like, I was thinking, and actually there's a phenomenal restaurant I really recommend. It's I think it's called Bel Mongo, where you can go in, you actually go into the building, it's all glass windows, the food is exceptional, but you see throughout the windows, you can see the bridge and the rest of Sydney, and also the sails. And during the Vivid Festival, you can see all the sails light up with the different moving images.
So I always saw that, but I didn't. I thought that was made of metal. So it's made of fabric.
It's made of tiles. Oh. So they're self-cleaning tiles. Mm. And I was thinking, oh, I want one of those in my house. But obviously, it's very, very expensive. Mm. But I think it's a superb idea. Mm. If you think about it, this architect thought long term. He didn't think short term. And I have never been in ladies' toilets where it was so stylish. I was taking photos of the toilets because it looked something out of like an Art Deco book. You know, it was all beautiful. Everything is incredibly stylish. So although you may think doing the tour and eating in a place like that would be extremely pricey and actually not value for money, I actually think it is value for money. It's one of the must-dos. And it's one of the, I know it's one of the tourist must-dos, but it really is. Out of all the places I've been into the world, it's go see, go do, and go eat at the Sydney Opera House. Next thing I did with Sydney, a lot of people just stay around the botanical gardens, always wonderful. I stayed at the Four Seasons Hotel, excellent hotel. It's literally a boomerang step away from the Sydney Opera House and the bridge and the Rocks Market, which has got all the creatives there and the artists. But I also stayed at a place called the Ovaloo, which is in a district called Woolloomooloo. And everyone remembers how Woolloomooloo is because people think sheep toilet, cow toilet, which I think is quite good.
What's that, what it means?
Yeah, well, no, it doesn't, but that's how you remember it. I don't know. I was told what it meant. I'll put it on the website what it meant, okay. But I don't know. But there's two districts which have gone, are really interesting. I went with a guy called Scott, who was from a company called Culture Tours, and he took us around Redfern and Chippendale areas, which did have some problems in the past.
So they're kind of neighbourhoods.
Yes, yeah. But they are very arty, very funky, fabulous murals. You've got, as you know, the Australian equivalent of Banksy out there, who's done phenomenal murals. So it's well worth going off the beaten track slightly with Sydney and in Sydney and finding out more about the place from companies like Culture Scouts. I also spent some time, if you want to spend some time out away from the lights, and the music, because there's wonderful street music. And also I went to some talks. I mentioned about the ideas. There is Spike Lee was out there talking about culture and about the challenges of being creative in a world which is becoming very digitally organized, very linear in its thinking. I also went to this really brilliant talk. There was about five women who were astrophysicists and forensic scientists, one of whom worked in the sort of like the Sydney Zoo. Another one who is a marine archaeologist who's been down to the Titanic many times and was talking about how shipwrecks can tell us more about our oceans and also more about ourselves. And how there was a mathematician there, a PhD mathematician, who was saying how mathematics saves a lot of animals in experiments. Now they don't have to experiment on animals so much. They can use mathematics, for example, to find out which viruses can kill tumours. You know, and it sounds all very dry, but because Australians, they have a real, they make everything sexy and funky and interesting. You know, it's subjects that should
they're
be dry.
They're also very down to earth, aren't they? So they'd make it sort of real for you to understand.
Incredibly, incredibly. And I really like, because I think of Australia as quite, for all its blessings, quite a paternalistic, you know, very macho society and culture.
Image.
It has got that image. But you
is
see,
it true?
I think these women, sort of, there was five speakers, you know, they rocked. They've really rocked. And I think the women are aware of that. And I think that, you know, that everyone's becoming very self-aware, just like we've had the Me Too movement. I think they've taken it very much in their stride. And I interviewed a few of them afterwards. Especially the vet who works, the forensic scientist who works in the zoo. And she said, you know, it's still very male dominated, but you've got to kick ass, and they do. And I also interviewed a guy who's he's an incredible scientist who works in digital technology and showing about the future of AI. And if there is a future, and which jobs will be lost and which won't, and all the creatives will be fine. People like you and I will be fine. The people who are going to have problems are people in law, people in the city, in finance.
I don't
train
agree
drivers.
With artificial intelligence. I don't agree with it. I think we've got. I mean.
Well, there's going to be issues with ethics, and also the artificial intelligence is only good as the people inputting the data, and most of the people inputting the data are male and under 30, and he was talking about that as well. So very, very interesting talk.
Well, I want it to go wrong, and then they'll give up on it.
It might kill us before that. I think that's potentially, you know, Terminator, and
It could eat us all up. Or,
indeed, potentially. Yeah. But the talk was very, very interesting, and I write more about that on your
Where
website.
Where else did you go, darling?
Outside Sydney, and outside these incredible hotels, like the Overlo in Woolloomooloo has its own peninsula, and it's like this huge dinosaur exoskeleton, very funky, very interesting hotel. But I drove out for about an hour and a half to Port Stephens, which is famous for the largest moving sand mass in the southern hemisphere, where I went camel riding and quad biking. Quad biking, I absolutely loved. Camel riding, yes, but I sort of think camels, Australia, doesn't really go. But it was a very beautiful thing to do. And Port Stephens.
Was it desert then?
Yes, exactly. But fabulous, and it's huge. It's right by the ocean. And while we were on the camels, we saw whales, we saw dolphins, lots and lots of dolphins around there. Beautiful, you can go on a cruise ride, which I did. But it's also famous, although this wasn't the season for it, for jellyfish. Fish and great whites. Last Christmas, someone was eaten by a great white, so be careful. That's Port Stephens. Obviously surfing on Bondi Beach, which I did, which was wonderful. Beautiful walks, wonderful restaurants along there, serving amazing food, amazingly fresh fish. I also went, it's about 2 hours outside Sydney. I recommend taking a trip to the Hunter Valley. I stayed at the Chateau Alain, which is on a golf course, but the reason I golf course,
I don't play golf.
Well, no, neither do I, and I usually think, nah. But this is quite interesting, and it tickled me really, because we drove in and there's all these beautifully manicured golf courses and these kangaroos jumping all over the place with their jerrys. And I'm thinking, do they sort of like nick the balls and put the balls in their pouches? You know, I sort of like...
I love it. Sudden reminder you're in Australia.
Exactly. And they're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
They're really big, aren't they? About 6 foot.
But they're wonderful animals. It's incredible. It's an, you know, Australia has so many fabulous indigenous wildlife. In fact, the forensic scientist I saw talking, her name's Lydia Tong, and she told me about wildlife crime is the fastest growing type of crime globally at the moment. You know, everyone hears about rhinoceros horns, but there's so many Australian animals like the echidnas who are just shipped out and for their medicinal or cosmetic use. And we are so stupid. Yeah. But she's doing a lot, and hopefully I might be working with her on a project later on. But what I did, it was my birthday while I was out there. 55. I'm 55. Anyway,
don't worry, I'm older than you.
On my 55th birthday, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, it was all the fives, and took a hot air balloon ride. And I've done a couple of them before, and I've always had quite, let's say, a challenging landing, one in a field that had just been freshly manured, and another one where we went onto our sides and the mayor of Oxford fell on top of me, which I, you know, is whatever. But this time it was
perfection.
Absolute perfection. Went up there for an hour and a half. Our guide Sam was absolutely brilliant.
Where were you looking at?
Looking down over the vineyards of the Hunter Valley. I visited while I was there some different vineyards. The area is very famous for its Shiraz and its Pinot Noir grape.
You must have had to try the wine.
I did, but I'm not. You see, I'm not
wine person.
I'm not an alcohol person, but I can still appreciate it. We went to a place called Broken Wood, another one called Tullocks, where you can. They pair chocolate with they pair chocolate with the different wines, which is interesting. It's local chocolate. Although I always find that, did you know Cadbury's milk is different, tastes different in Australia to it does here. It doesn't taste as good.
Factory.
No, what it is that Australian temperature, the temperature in Australia is melting chocolate temperature. Mm. So they have to put a chemical in it to stop it from melting, but it makes it taste different. So that's but my favourite one was a vineyard called Tinkler's, and it was very small and it was almost like a pub, and they have fabulous music playing. It just didn't have any pretension whatsoever. In my lowly opinion, they had some of the best wine. So sometimes smaller is better. The balloon ride is definitely, you know, I mentioned about the Sydney tour. I would say the quad biking at Port Stephens and also the balloon ride over Hunter Valley are definitely must do's while you're out there during the Vivid Festival.
So had Australia changed since you last there?
I think the experience I had I have changed as well. I think I've always been quite bohemian in my outlook and very open to experience. And I've always, when I've travelled to places, been very much aware of the history of a place. Like I'm about to go off to Canada, and just coming back from Australia, I was very aware of the Aboriginal issues. Mm-hmm. And indeed, some of the problems mentioned that were in Redfern and Chippendale are based on the fact that the Aboriginals feel that the gentrification, I think they call it, of the area means that they have been marginalised. And in Canada, the First Nations, so a lot of the countries, and the English, a lot of the countries, the original people who were, it was their land, they have been marginalised. You know, the English weren't particularly, they were awful, we've been
invaders
dreadful.
Invaders of any country are not particularly nice.
No, but the English were particularly bad. And so I was very aware of that too. But I feel that as a destination, Sydney, unlike Melbourne, I think, has had a lot of architectural input about how everything is laid out. And that's why as a city, it's architecturally, there's a lot of symmetry, a lot of beauty. Whereas Sydney has just sort of like, we need a school there, and we need a building there. Whereas I think what's happened now with Redfern and Chippendale increasingly happened more into central Sydney. When there's development, they've really thought about the aesthetics of it, because you've got this incredibly beautiful, very clever building in the Sydney Opera House, and it's very well positioned on the harbour, next door to the Botanical Gardens, next door to the Overloo Hotel, and next door to the bridge and the Rocks Market. It's been that round the harbour is very, very clever. Now what they're wanting to do is make inner Sydney rock, as you know, be as sassy, be as sexy, be as interesting, be as beautiful as around the immediate Sydney Harbour area.
And how are they doing it?
They're investing in it. I think if you go, I mentioned Redfern, but if you go into Chippendale, which is really literally just across the thoroughfare, a lot of the old warehouses and a lot of the old buildings have been turned into the most extraordinary hippie restaurants. The Babington House, Soho House ideas, but with an Australian authenticity. You know, they do
The food. Tell us about the food there.
Well, the food, one of my focuses was on well-being. And I wanted to see whether, like, I don't eat wheat, but everywhere now you have loads of gluten-free options, loads of dairy-free options, loads of vegetarian, vegan
options.
So
they're way ahead of us on that.
They are way ahead of us. Although, you know, when I was at the talks, I was talking to one of the speakers about climate change, and they feel that actually the UK is much more ahead of them as far as climate change is concerned. While I was out there was just a law passed for a new coal mine. Now we're getting rid of ours, and as they said, they've agreed to have another coal mine, and there's a lot of controversy over that. And really the one thing that Australia should be exploring is solar energy, because they have so much of it. So that's really one thing that they should be exploring. But
so food was good.
The food was excellent. If you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you will have absolutely no problems. If you're celiac, you'll have no problems.
So good to hear, because the trouble is, if you are one of those people, it can be limiting. So to be able to go somewhere where you don't have to think, and you can go out to eat, because there's lots of places where you can't even go out to eat.
Yeah, well, I think everywhere, like we had, and also if you like fish as well, but even like I went to a restaurant called Icebergs just around Bondi Beach, and it's just looking out over to Bondi Beach. It's beautiful, and we had some of the freshest fish. And usually when I'm here, because it's expensive, I don't eat fish here, and because I think there's all the mercury in, you know, I quite like tuna, but there's all the mercury in it. Whereas I went out there, and I was able to try fish, and of course you've got, you know, they do wonderful steaks, and they do things like kangaroo, and you know, the sort of the alternative.
But I like looking at kangaroos, not eating them.
Exactly. So it's
so they call it roux.
But I didn't eat any kangaroo while
I'm
I was there.
You didn't.
No,
I didn't. Pleased you were sympathetic with the natives.
Indeed. But there's few provisos I say about your stay there. I think also what's happened with a lot of hotels that you stay in, when you book as a deposit, they may take anything from $100 to $300 out of your account as a deposit, and now that money is frozen now, and you don't get it back till
traveling and you don't have much.
Exactly, it's 7 working days later. So if you're staying at a variety of hotels, which I did, you could end up with about £700 frozen from your account.
Terrible.
For about 7
and
working
no
days.
No one's got £700 in their account.
Well, it's sort of you have to move it about. So that's only thing. And I always think when you book a hotel, always ask beforehand if that is their policy. Some hotels do not do that, other hotels do. And it does. It's nothing to do with the size of the hotel or sort of like the length of stay.
Is there Airbnb out there?
There is Airbnb out there. And also there is some of the best hostels in the world out there. Sydney Hostel is a very, very good hostel. I stayed there myself only for one day, but it's excellent. And there's a lot of self-catering alternatives, but I think Sydney is becoming, you know, savvy about it.
So if you went this time of year, which is summer in Britain and
autumn
but you know, summer in Britain, your flights are cheaper,
you
can eat really easily there if you're vegan or veggie, which loads of people are, and you can stay in places which, you know, so you can have a value holiday.
I think it is. It's one of those things where I wouldn't say it's cheap, but it is excellent value for money, and as an experience it is a superb experience. You know, going during the Vivid Festival, it is like walking through a scene in Blade Runner. Everything is lit up, but not just in a, you know, sparkly sort of way. It's clever, it's interesting. And you find yourself just staring at the buildings, you know, at the bridge, and the bridge faces the opera house, and also the lights are reflected into the water. All the boats going in and out of the harbour at night have their different lights
on. Everything is thought of and designed.
It's a living firework for 3 weeks. It really is. And I think, you know, it's finished now. It finishes always around mid-June, and I'm sure the locals must think, oh, you know, where the light's gone. I would want to have them perhaps sort of like not all the time, but I think Sydney is famous for its New Year fireworks as being, I think, probably the best in the world. But they've surpassed themselves with the Vivid Festival. It was in its 11th year this year, and next year will obviously be its 12th. So, and I'm told every year it's been better. But it's not just lights and music and art, the ideas side of it. Go to the talks. If you're going to go, book yourself into some talks. You know, the Spike Lee talk, for example, was booked up. I think as soon as, you know, it came out that he was going to speak, it was booked up straight away. But all the talks are utterly fascinating and well worth the visit.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous and telling us all about Sydney.
My pleasure.
And you can always find amazing women, stories, culture, fabulous people and kangaroos on Radio Gorgeous. Thank you.